right. Thank you, Rob Martyr. Justin Kaufman, it's a download. 720 WGN. All right, it's time to reload this week's news. We got a lot to talk about. The biggest stories, the winners, the losers, overreported, underreported. Which story took you down the rabbit hole this week? And which story will be remembered 5, 10, 15, 50, 500 years from this week? This is going to be a good one. Last week, we had the Las Vegas shooting, and that dominated the entire thing, as it should. But I think this week it's kind of up for grabs on what would be the news story of the week. 312-981-7200. We got capable panelists tonight. Lauren Cohn, journalist. Jeff Cohen, investigative reporter at the Tribune. Cohen and Cohn in studio. Good to see you guys.
Thanks. I feel like a law firm / accounting firm.
we'll end that real quickly as soon as we start talking.
It's true.
All right, so let's get to the biggest story. I mean, we kind of look at both, but what do you have, Lauren, for the biggest story of the week?
It was the soda tax, which is really the sweetened beverage tax, which is really the ridiculous Tony Taxwinkle tax. I could just keep going, but I'm going to just look over at Jeff now.
You're really on it. You've given nicknames and everything to this. Like you feel like this is going to be a stain on Toni Preckwinkle for the rest of her.
I think Ballet Slippers is done. I think she's going to be always known as Toni Taxwinkle, and now she's kicked it to the commissioners. Well, now it's on you guys to figure out how to fill the hole for the revenue, because I tried with sweetened beverages, and you know me, I'm a holistic health coach. I'm all about health, but this was always about revenue. And I've said this before, if you're going to tax sweetened beverages, which, by the way, this was the most confusing tax ever of what is a sweetened beverage, or so, then tax everything that has sugar and, you know, stuff in it that's bad for you.
Jeff, what do you think? Do you think, I mean, from the soda tax or sweetened beverage tax, I mean, this was definitely a fumble.
It was a big fumble. It was super unpopular. I mean, I like Vitamin Water Zero, and that was getting taxed as well, but... Yeah, I think for me going forward, the most interesting thing is going to be what is the damage to her? Because we've talked about this before. She's kind of like an under-the-radar boss type character here. I mean, you want to run for a judge? She's one of the people you go see.
She sat next to Hillary Clinton next to Bill Clinton in the Democratic convention.
She stacked the deck for Kim Fox and had kept people out of that race. So she's kind of like an old school person. So I'm just wondering going forward, does she still have that same
work? I guess the question I have is that Toni Preckwinkle, for all of that you said, Lauren, I actually would put her, and I know that I am in the I'm utmost minority when it comes to this, but I would almost even put her in a winner category because of all the politicians and all of the people that are in power right now, and whether it be the commissioners, she's the one who stood by her guns. She wanted to do this. She went for it. She's been going for it for 2-3 years. She says over and over that it's about both revenue and it's about health. And I don't know, I want that conviction from my politician. She believes in something that's hurting her community. She wants to go ahead and fix it and at the same time make money off it. I don't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is Cook County commissioners who at one point were for it, and then they recognized through reading the tea leaves that they're like, no, I'm not. You're not? I'm not. Oh, yeah. And then they, now I can run for another office. I feel like that's what we're sick of in politicians, the ones who just kind of jump and bump. Now, I do understand that there was Cook County voters who came out and said, overwhelmingly, this is bad. And constituents calling up their commissioners, that kind of stuff. I understand that, so I can understand why they would say, all right, this is bad. But I feel more often than not in this saga, it has been Cook County commissioners looking for their opportunity, using their ambition to be able to take advantage of a political situation.
Well, it seems like the Chicago way is not always the politician that we really like. It's the politician that, we don't like, but then there's someone else we don't like more, right? So Rahm beat Chuy Garcia because suddenly Chuy came out and he was a little bit more to the left, and suddenly the unpopular, unlikable, mean Rahm won a second time, right? So that's what happened. So it really depends on who Tony, runs against and what happens. I don't think Toni looked likable in this, because if you looked at the headlines and the way it played out in the media, it was never so much that she really cared about health. It was she's not admitting that revenue is a part of it. And so when it really played out in the headlines that she finally admits it's revenue. So I never got the feeling that Toni cared so much about my health.
I know, having her on the show, she was on the show with me, and she was quick, because she always is, but she was quick to knock me down to say, no, this is about revenue, but it's also about health. Like, she made it clear that it was both, because I went at her the same way, saying, you say this is about health, but isn't it about revenue? She's like, in the classic Preckwinkle pause, well, it's about both.
We were just saying off the air, though, it seems like when the projections started coming back that sales were down so far that the revenue was going to flatten out. That's when all the flipping happened.
Yeah, right.
They realized that
they're not going to make the money they wanted to anyway.
And they're catching the political arrows for no reason now.
Right.
And so I don't know how much credit you get for that kind of a flop.
Well, and then all these politicians, so they're flipping because they want to make sure they get reelected. And it's really up to the people. It's the people here who vote have to wake up and take a look at, you know, who are you voting for then?
Lauren, as a holistic health coach and what have you, is Eric Zorn had a great piece this week about whether or not what you believe in one side and what this tax went through. We, for the first time in modern American history, had a serious conversation about the ill effects of soda. And sugary drinks. It became an issue that was talked about on talk shows and in newspapers and other places where before it wasn't. So is that a win for Preckwinkle, Bloomberg, and people that want to see this issue taken care of?
Not in my book, because I think that everybody knows that fruits and vegetables are good for you and that, you know, eat your protein. I think everybody knows that. You know that sugar's bad for you. You know that cake and cookies are bad for you, but you like it anyway and you want to eat it anyway. The bottom line is people don't want to be told what to put in their bodies. Educate people, and you find out later on, you know, if you get diabetes or it leads to, you know, strokes and cancer. And we all want to sort of push people towards a healthier lifestyle. I mean, obviously, we want to educate people, and it drives down health costs later on, right? But to try and force people and tell them what they can put in their bodies, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, but it's not forcing them, it's taxing them. There's a big difference. There's no ban on sugar. They're just saying, if you want this product, it's a dollar more.
It was just so confusing to have, you know, non-sweetened drinks in the mix and, you know, diet sodas and things that aren't, you know, 400 grams of sugar. I think that coming out of the gate, people didn't believe it. They never really.
But you stopped drinking soda, right?
I
did. So this is kind of what you were just asking this question.
Well,
you always look good, but yeah. Did you lose weight? Do you feel different?
I do, but then again, I'm it's more than that. But I do. I think I wonder about this, and Pete and I have talked about this as well. This idea that, you know, when it is out there in the ether and everyone's talking about it, that it makes me go, yeah, you know what? I don't want to pay that extra dollar. I just won't do it. I shouldn't drink it anyway. I'm just not going to drink it. And I feel like that kind of worked in the sense that I was probably drinking two Dr. Peppers or coffee with, you know, sugar and everything, you know, even though that wasn't part, you know, that's why it got confusing. But my point is that if you're in a situation like the cigarettes is what I always think about. It took a monster marketing campaign by the government, really, to say that there is a connection to cancer. Here are the x-rays. Here are the look at this photo. Look at this photo. Look at this photo. And I'm going to put a tax on top of you. We're not at that point yet in society.
Because you got to go with everything. Then you got to go with sugar. It's not just like it's soda. It's got to be sugar. Sugar is addictive. Sugar is, you know, like a drug. You have to go at that route. And there's been a lot of stuff out there just about sugar.
Yeah, I guess you do. I just wonder, though, on this idea of liquid candy, if these companies, these big companies, not unlike tobacco and the tobacco industry, have targeted certain blocks and have targeted kids in the way of doing this very similar kind of stuff that was done by other industries that found out that the product's bad for us.
Well, it seems like there are strategies that are maybe a little bit more targeted than just an across the board tax. Like we've seen school districts take, you know, vending machines out of cafeterias, right, and things like that. So maybe there's some momentum. I just don't see that it's going to change behavior that much when you've got people just driving to Indiana to get 7 gallons of Coke, you know.
Well, and a lot of people were going out like other areas to buy and load up. But here's the thing. So now what? Because we're in a hole. We've got to pay for the pension somehow. We're not getting any kind of reform. So they're not going to have this. What's the next tax? What are the commissioners going to do? You know, they're going to tax the air you breathe. I mean, what's left? Or is it this redistribution? What Mayor Emanuel is saying, okay, now we're going to change how we tax amusement.
I mean, Lauren, you nailed it. I mean, I think that everything's on the table, and they only have a month. I mean, I think the budget for Cook County is voted on in mid-November. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight, 312-981-7200. Okay, we'll come back. We'll do winners and losers. Cubs. We'll talk overreported, underreported. Cubs. And we'll also talk about which story we remembered. Cubs? Maybe. Stay with us. Oh, yeah. They're coming in. Texts coming in. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen, 312-981-7200. We are reloading this week's news. 406 says, where's the candy bar, Twinkies, and junk food tax if it's all about health? Yeah, they're following. If soda tax was about health and not revenue, then why are job losses linked to the lack of additional tax? Justin, a carrot will never replace a Coke. That's from Ed. If it was for our health, she'd want us to stop buying the stuff, and it worked. How are they going to make money? No sales equals $0. And then 312 says, Lauren, and this is for Lauren. Oh, I want to be told what, okay. Your guest doesn't want to be told what to be put in her body. So why does a party have no hesitation to tell a woman she has no right to control her body? It's a little abortion kind of knock. So
are we walking down
no,
that
let's,
road?
No, let's not.
It's Friday.
That's a gear shift from the pop tax.
Whoa. Okay.
312-981-7200. All right, let's get to the winners this week. This will be a fun one because obviously, and Lauren, you're a big winner. And I mean,
thank you.
Yeah, right? What do you have for the winner?
Oh, the Cubs.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know. And I admit, I fell asleep. I tried to stay awake, put pins in my eyes, but I woke up in the morning. That was the first thing I looked at. You got to love the Cubbies. You got to love them.
I mean, the new Cubs are so un-Cub. In the way that last night's game, there was, I mean, you felt it as in lifelong Chicago. And I'm a White Sox guy, but knowing the Cubs, I'm like, the sweat, I'm just like, this is exactly how I felt as a kid in 84 or a kid in 89. But this team isn't that Cub.
I don't think the fan base had the panic going into that game that we would have had, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And even when they got down early on, I don't think much. I mean, people were starting to freak out, but not in the Cub way that you would have in, 1989. Or
that eighth inning. The eighth inning
the whole
when,
game was
I
torture,
mean, Wilson Contreras picking off the Lobaton from first base.
Well, that's the other thing.
What an amazing play.
Without replay, we may not be having this conversation.
Amazing. Sure. The Chicago Cubs, of course, winners. And you know what? The best part about it is that the Chicago Cubs, this will be 3 years in a row.
Three
NLCSs in a row. It's hard to even fathom that the Chicago Cubs are in that conversation. And the great thing is it brings a great baseball series in October to Chicago. I mean, even if they don't, repeat as world champions, the fact that they're giving this kind of competition to the city where baseball, it's almost unheard of to be in a situation where you get 3 years in a row. Those are the elite teams. And the Chicago Cubs won a World Series, and it's amazing.
And it's nice that we have something to get excited about. Considering the cycle of news and all the things that go on, that we have something to be happy about and smile about and cheer about.
This was kind of a loser sports town. We were the giant Cleveland for a long time.
Right. Now,
if anybody who's been around long enough, you've seen, I know for me, I've seen arguably peak Bears, 85, peak Bulls, no question, peak Blackhawks, snuck a White Sox World Series in there, and now peak Cubs for sure. This is, Theo said, this is the Cubs' golden era.
And you can't get excited about the Bulls and the Bears right now.
Oh, jeez. Can you imagine the NBA starts next week?
I was writing down my list of all the teams I wanted to watch where all our players that I liked went. So D. Wade went to Cleveland. Where's Jimmy Butler's what? He's the Timberwolves now.
Right?
Like all my
with
favorite
Taj
players.
Gibson. Got Taj Gibson's in Minnesota too.
Yeah, that's right.
So there you go. All right. So the other winner, as we talk about winners this week, Jeff, you had Twitter.
I felt like I was digging deep for winners this week. Once it passed the Cubs.
They had a tough week. I would say that they're up and down. I would put him in my loser category. But
I know that point. It seems like every day I come to the realization more, and maybe I'm late to this as a media person, but just how essential Twitter has become in our society.
Right.
I mean, Trump has made it the go-to messaging system from the White House to the people of the United States, number one. That's a whole rare category. But every time we go through something like we went through with the Weinstein situation and Rose McGowan this week, and today there was a women's boycott of Twitter.
Yep.
But it wasn't an Uber situation. It didn't get deleted. It was one day because it's become that essential for everybody. And just the reaction to the Rose McGowan thing was, I mean, you would have thought that somebody put her in prison, when her account was shut down.
Yeah, I mean, it shows a lot of influence, especially the other platforms that would be their competitors, Facebook. You're finding more and more nefarious activity that's happening there, with the ads and everything that's happening, that it does seem more and more we see the sources of the articles that we're reading are all from Twitter.
Twitter's winning. And I don't know if you did this, but you watched the Cubs game like last night. I've got the phone in my one hand just watching people react to everything because I think it's funny. Or, ESPN's throwing stats out real time. It's just, I don't know, it feels like it's really.
Well, and if you go back to when, we started in newsrooms and we had remember the AP wires and the UP, what was it, the UPI wire that was ticking out? That's how we got our information. We didn't have that easy access to information. Even now, those of us who are journalists, we're vetting things and we're looking at things, but the general public isn't doing what we do. So their news source is Twitter, because they're not going to read through all the stuff that we read
through. Which
is
dangerous. It's dangerous in the way that there's a lot of stuff on Twitter that's just wrong. I find myself here on the show where I'll say, I read this thing about blah, blah, blah. And they're like, where'd you read that? I'm like, Twitter. Like I you know, right away, I'm that's like, I didn't really read it. I just kind of
looked at it. I've had to retrain myself. It used to be, you know, was it on page one? Now the paper, that's literally an afterthought. And then it was, well, where is it on the homepage? You know, can I get above, right, you know, this certain click area? Now literally just throw it on Twitter at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And if it's good enough, you just watch it explode.
And don't you feel the pressure to tweet?
Yeah, well, that's a big part of it. That is also a big part of Twitter this week, that the New York Times, a new editorial or just the editorial team there.
The policy
is that they will no longer be able to have sort of free reign on Twitter to say what you will, which has been a big point of contention for the Trump administration, for others, that that reporters are on there, you know, giving their opinion on what they think about this, that, and the other. And the New York Times has been pretty loose with their policy, but the managers say no more.
Well, we get reminded of it upstairs, you know, in internal memos that we need to be careful about. It can be the equivalent of putting a campaign sign on your lawn if you're routinely, you know, on one side or the other.
Yeah, right.
It does undercut what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We're talking winners and losers, reloading the news. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break, get an update on tonight's news, and then we'll come back and we'll get to the big category everybody's waiting for, losers. All right, 312-981-7200. Lauren Cohn, Jeff Cohen in studio tonight. We're reloading this week's news. We're getting through the winners, and now it's time for the losers. I feel like more often we find ourselves with more in this category than in the other. I don't know what that says about this segment or about society we live in, but there are a lot. Why don't we start close to home and go with Mike Dicca as our first? I mean, this was something that we all had on our list as, you know, he, of course, doing the Monday Night Football pregame for radio, made the assertion that over the last 100 years there hasn't been any oppression
yeah.
of black people, and you just question. I mean, when that came out, I mean, you just automatically were like, even people who may even people who might understand what he was trying to say, are like, maybe not the right way to say it, but
well, I mean, even you remember 2014. He had the quote about the Redskins name, and he thought that whole controversy was stupid. And he was quoted as saying, "And what are we supposed to do? Call them the Proud Skins?" And just there's always a little bit of wincing with Chicago because we were just talking about it. It's like he's such a name brand here, you know. He's a one name guy, Ditka, Jordan. As far as Chicago sports goes,
right.
He's an icon, and people just want him to kind of, you know, chill out, sit there, be Ditka, sell the Chevrolets, have the steakhouse, you know, be that guy. We don't need the
political commentary.
Crazy, you know, well, leave the racial analysis to somebody else.
And even to people who, you know, got down on one knee, he had harsh comments. But the thing about Ditka is that when he came out and apologized, like he got it, right? He's like, I goofed, or I apologize. I was talking about players and I wasn't talking about everybody. Of course, I know there's oppression. Then you're like, oh yeah, it's Ditka, and he apologized, and at least he did that. And then you sort of, he's still the likable Ditka for some reason.
Yeah,
you know?
It is interesting. Yeah. I mean, of course, this is probably a societal thing in the way that we, you know, sports heroes, and we put them up on a pedestal, and we will quickly give them the ability to roll things back and apologize, you know, in some ways. But there is something to be said, Jeff, about this concept of, and I don't mean this as any disrespect to Mike Dicca, but stay in your lane in the way that you're like, okay, this is what you do. You cover football. We like you because of football. We also kind of like you because you're Chicago. But the other issues that are going around the world, maybe you have your own opinions about it, but we don't need to hear him. Like at a certain point, it was like, yeah, you know. So I don't know. I feel like Dicca shows up in the loser category, although he did apologize. A strange apology, I think, but yeah.
Somebody told him to apologize.
There were a lot of words in that apology in the statement that you're like, wow, Dicca, that doesn't sound
And it was a little bit
Dicca.
Of, well, I guess I apologize, but no matter what I say, you're going to take it the wrong
way. Right, exactly.
So have a nice day.
All right, moving on. Another at the capital L loser category, Harvey Weinstein. I mean, I don't even know what to say as more and more is revealed about his terrible behavior, and not just behavior, criminal behavior. I mean, now Rose McGowan and Twitter, you mentioned, Jeff. I mean, the rape accusations, sexual assault accusations, that are the serious, and then even serious as well, but just the propositioning and the consistencies and the stories of all these women, these actresses that came up. I mean, it's astounding that this is out. And there is a question of why now? What's happening? But this story is, it seems to be getting bigger.
Well, I'm asking that question, why now? I mean, it's like the same thing with Roger Ailes at Fox News, the Bill Cosby story. One person's story comes out, and obviously there was an investigation with the New Yorker and the New York Times, and suddenly the floodgates open. And a lot of these actresses that are coming out, and I, you know, you feel for them for what happened, but take Gwyneth Paltrow for as an example, who said it happened, but yet she stayed with him and went, and I don't know if she won the award for Shakespeare in Love, mm-hmm. but stayed with him for these. And even, you know, many of the men who are coming out in Hollywood who feel compelled, you know, to say something, like George Clooney, you know, or hearing about it. Well, I heard something about it, but I didn't realize
Affleck,
this was
right,
this far.
Right, right.
And it's just sort of this kind of grotesque. Everybody knew it was going on, but overlooked it. And then the cat's out of the bag. So let's open the floodgates.
Well, people aren't in Hollywood. We're familiar with the concept of casting couch. It's been grossly depicted in pop culture, and we all know the secrets that are behind.
It's part of the media culture.
It's part of the exactly. But the question is that we almost always want to assume that it's a bygone era. That was something in the 50s and the 60s or 70s or 80s and 90s, but that can't be happening now.
Yeah,
so to have this come
wonder.
Out, it's just, and a lot of this was in Harvey Weinstein's past, but it does make you just sort of, I mean, I'm dejected in the sense that it's 2017 and the casting couch at this level still exists.
Yeah, I mean, the only bright side you can think of is, as you pointed out, these are some of the most powerful women in Hollywood, and, you know, maybe, you know, there can be some realization that if they can come forward and this happened to them, that maybe other victims out there can have the courage to say something, you know, a similar situation that's not graduated to that level, but it's in more of an everyday scenario.
Well, and that the maybe, you know, in the new generations that are coming up, the millennials just won't be a part of it. I mean, Jane Fonda was said, I just found out about her. I knew about it a while ago, but I'm too old. You know, it didn't happen when I was younger. He's going for the younger. I don't know if it'll change the culture, because I feel like there's what else is next. Okay, so we had all these with the stuff at Fox News, and maybe, and now the tide of the culture maybe change over there, and the Bill Cosby and this, but I think it's just going to continue. I do. I still think there's a lot of sexism in society, and we haven't broken the glass ceiling as women, and people are still afraid not to speak up if they want their jobs or success. Right. I hate to say it.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. I mean, there is something to take away from this. I mean, just jaw-dropping story of Harvey Weinstein. That might be it. The idea that there is, you know, that this is still a rampant issue for women in society, and, you know, this is obviously a situation that at least we shine a light on it, and people like Harvey Weinstein are at least punished for the wrongdoings.
And now allegedly his defense is what? He's got a sex addiction and he's going to go for treatment in Arizona, and the TMZ video that caught him saying, I'm okay, everyone deserves a second chance, you know.
I mean, this is decades and decades of stuff, and if it wasn't for the New York Times, he's not changing his ways.
I mean, it's like the Tiger Woods defense.
The question is, and you hear this, and this is the only thing that I take away from it, and I find it to be such a terrible story, but why now? We heard that. And then there have been some thoughts that, you know, this was leaked by the Weinstein Company that was given the New York Times or New Yorker, that people, it wasn't just sort of victims coming forward, but it was someone alerting and saying, we have this information. And then you just wonder about how much of this is just Harvey Weinstein's down on his luck. And I don't even say wonder. This has been said. He's not as powerful as he used to be. He's older. He's frail. Now's the time to strike if we want to take his power from him. And I don't mean the victims. I mean Hollywood.
That sounds like more of the movie and the narrative that would make sense.
Right. That it's not necessarily let's get this predator off the streets. It's more let's take this,
sadly,
let's use it, and so we can get the power, and you know, some other predator replaces him. There you go. All right. The good losers today. Let's keep going to losers. You have U.S. soccer, Jeff. tough week for U.S. soccer.
I'm not a soccer person, but yeah, I understand that this was sort of the Hindenburg of American soccer, and they're not going to be in the World Cup in 2018. I guess we could put Fox there. I guess they had planned to broadcast it and basically had bet the farm on it.
That's tough. You have to. The United States has to come. I don't know soccer that well, but I do know that the teams that are in their division to be able to bounce to get to the World Cup qualifiers, they're supposed to beat. This is a monumental,
right,
total upset. They should all be fired at U.S. soccer.
My understanding was that it had basically been set up that way as well. And no knock on Trinidad and Tobago, but you know, it seems like that was one that they could have had.
Yeah, it's not a good day, and you're right, because the World Cup is a I mean, this is a big event. I mean, it rivals the Olympics in the way that people go crazy around the world for it. I mean, you see, even in Chicago, there were viewing parties. To have the United States not actually in that competition, that is very strange.
Well, we've been hearing for years, too, about how it's the new Little League and the MLS. You know, that league is finally taking off, and it seems like this is definitely maybe a speed bump.
Yeah. All right. I also have down on my list Puerto Rico. I think that's another loser in the way I don't mean it in the way that they did anything wrong. I mean it in the way that, for whatever reason, they continue to have just not a lot of sympathy from President Trump, but just this strange, their story has become politicized in a way that they're recovering from a hurricane. But at the same time, you know, the president tweets out, well, we can't be there forever. You know, he didn't say that. He doesn't say that about Houston. He doesn't say it about Florida. He doesn't say it about even, you know, any of the other situations. I would never expect the commander in chief to say that. Well, we can't be there forever, and especially in the second week. So it's a very strange story that continues to be more absurd to me as people in Puerto Rico are suffering, and somehow there's politics being played.
Well, and I don't know that he would have come out and said it if that mayor hadn't challenged him. There was one mayor that was praising him, and the other mayor that was challenging him, the female. She was everywhere. She was angry, and so I think that just, you know, typical. President Trump
takes
is like,
bait. Yeah.
Very strange, and it's not over. I mean, from all accounts, the recovery's just been very slow.
I read a piece on Vox, which I think will become a bigger story. It might even be underreported, that the official death toll is something like 30 some odd bodies. I think that the Puerto Rican, I don't know what the government official is there, but something like that. But they had done their own work on going to different morgues and figuring it out. And they said that the body count is well over 400, but the government there is kind of pushing it to the side because that doesn't make for good headline. So it's just, even when you're politicizing who died and how many people died, that's just not a good situation. 312-981-7200, Jeff Cohen, Lauren Cohen in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get to the overreported and underreported stories this week. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. It's a download. I'm Justin Coffin. Lauren Cohen here. Jeff Cohen. Cohen and Cohen. We're right to that point of the show where we have overreported and underreported. What stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered? Let's do overreported. I have on my list today already. One day. It took one day to already find this to be overreported. The Merry Christmas debate that the president brought up today in his speech to the Value Summit, where he said he wants to bring, they don't want to say Merry Christmas, but I'm bringing it back. and then I just watched, I mean, everyone just write about it, because there must be some, their newsrooms around the country are like, that sells papers, get it in the paper. Like, this is not an issue anymore. Like, I feel like we've moved on from it. Why is this even
being
brought up?
It seems very 2000 or something.
Yeah.
And it, first of all, say whatever you want.
What you want. Who cares? I don't know if there's a they in this scenario. I mean, it just seems like candidate Trump once again going to his base. And yet we're treating it as if it's news. And I don't think it's news.
I feel like he throws these things out there. It's like lighting a match to divert from something else. Get away from, let's talking about the Iran deal or North Korea or anything else. And suddenly we end up on the Merry Christmas debate. I mean, this is just who he is. But that whole debate, I mean, it becomes like, what's PC? We go through this period of, you know, is it more appropriate to say Happy Holidays so you don't offend someone? Or do you, if you know somebody's Jewish, you say Happy Hanukkah. If you know somebody celebrates Christmas, you say Merry Christmas.
Sure.
It's just...
But not unlike, okay, we can go right back to the soda tax, where I'm like, hey, man, no one should regulate what I want to say and how I want to say it. If I want to say Merry Christmas, I can say Merry Christmas. If I want to say Happy Holidays, I say Happy Holidays. One's not better than the other. One's not different. Who cares? Right. If I say Happy Holidays, it's not because I'm PC. I truly believe. I'm like, I don't know your religion. I don't know what you celebrate. So I say Happy Holidays because I feel in the spirit of holidays. Hey, Happy Holidays.
Whatever it is for you.
Yeah.
I hope it's happy.
Exactly.
May your light shine. the other, but that dovetails right into yours, Jeff, about this idea. The overreported is the Trump machine. This idea of IQ tests or the mystery police officer or even today. I mean, we saw I'm going to bring religion back to the likes that you've never seen. What does that even mean? I mean, at a certain point, we got to stop reporting every story out and every little thing he says.
Yeah. In the media's defense, this has been a crazy year. We've never seen a president like this. And 95% of the things he says are, you know, newsworthy. I agree, there's going to be a point where some of these things we're going to have to kind of let it go. Like we've talked about, I mean, you got Puerto Rico, most of California is on fire. There's a lot going on. We don't have to completely overreact to every little thing that he tweets or says.
I've noticed him, and I'm not the only one, but like today, I mean, at a summit, he said the weirdest thing that didn't even make sense. It was like religion. I love religion. Religion. I'm going to bring it back. The likes in which you've never seen. What is that? What are you talking about? And then in the next story, I hear the reporter say, Donald Trump, President Trump did call this the worst deal ever for America. He's talking about the Iran deal. I'm like, wait, he's got hyperbole all over the place. And like to pick and choose and cherry pick what hyperbole is news and what's not. I'm like, all right, you know, he says worst and this is the worst thing. And the
it's
worst.
It's a mess. It's a mess.
Yeah. I mean, he's using words that I think he's just placeholding to get to his next thought. And we're trying ways to make it into something bigger.
And he's never moved out of campaign speak.
Right.
He never made that shift at all.
I think in the beginning, the media was sort of like, you know, in the fetal position, blowing into a paper bag. But I think everybody's kind of standing up now and they get it.
They get it. All right. Overreported. You have both of you had this, the kneeling story for the NFL. It's losing a little bit of steam, but you wouldn't know that from the media. They're still trying to get those clicks.
Well, for me, it's what is the story? I mean, it started with Kaepernick kneeling and he had a reason for kneeling. And then President Trump decided to say, unless I missed something in between when he was in Alabama at the press conference, you know, I think that these guys should be fired if they're kneeling. And it turned into, okay, is this a protest against police brutality in certain in communities? Is this, are we protesting the national anthem? Are we wanting to rewrite the national anthem because what's in it? Are we now standing in solidarity against President Trump?
Yeah.
Now we've got school children that are kneeling. Do they know why they're kneeling? And so I look at this story and I go, how did this start and where we are now? And do people even know what this is about anymore?
Well, I wonder. I mean, I would think that the debates that I see are mostly in my sports center, like in the morning, I'll turn sports center on and that's all they're debating all the time. And I'm like, why is this where the debate's at? Because it's happening in football. I understand that, but I would like to get it out of conversations of the Mike Dickas and the Stephen A. Smiths and move it into a more sophisticated debate.
Yeah, and I agree it's diluted. And the thing for me was that the NFL had this moment that first Sunday where it was at least perceived as a free speech moment. It's like the one thing you can't do is tell people that they can't do something related to the flag or whatever, because that sort of takes away from the point of what makes the flag special. So the NFL has this great moment. Now it turns out that some of the same owners who are actually on the field with these guys kneeling and locking arms or whatever are trying to come up with rules that are going to force them to stand. It's like, what? You bet you're ruining
it. Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, the NFL doesn't care at all about the social injustices that the players are kneeling for. They care about their bottom line and the unity. And we made jokes about this on the show. The unity when you lock arms to show unity against Trump, probably more about keeping every player standing up. You know, then you can't kneel if you're all locked arms, right? One guy's trying to get down, like, get up, you know, like that kind of thing. I mean, they made it seem like we're all together, but you're not really, because
Jerry Jones was kneeling, right? And isn't he one supposedly who's on the list who's going to come
didn't
up with
kneel, yeah,
I mean, talk about pick a lane. You're kneeling on TV at national TV.
And then it becomes people aren't watching football, and then it becomes about the revenue of football. Now Roger Goodell's going to talk this week, and it never ends.
You know, all of us in here, we care about the bottom line and the ratings of NFL football. Who cares about that stuff? I don't care about that stuff.
And the thing is, if I go to a game, I know for me that I'm going to stand and put my hand over my heart, and I'm going to, you know, stand up for the national anthem. But if you're sitting next to me and you decide not to get up and you're on your cell phone, that's your thing. I'm not going to
look at us. We're all about today. We're all about personal responsibility. We don't care about whatever.
The other question that I haven't heard talked about enough is how that sort of, nationalistic demonstration, if you will, got injected into it in the first place. Yeah. Why do we, you know, that's a whole show.
All right, that's overreported. Yeah, that's Lauren Cohen, Jeff Cohen in studio, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do underreported and which story took us down the rabbit hole. Stay with us. It's Download Here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're reloading this week's news. Lauren Cohen, journalist. Jeff Cohen, investigative reporter over at the Tribune here. And we are all the way to underreported, 312-981-7200. Got some great stuff coming in as well in the text. We'll try to get to everybody. Let's get to underreported. We all had on our list the California wildfires, which, you know, I think early in the week, you definitely can make a case for it. Today, yesterday and today, I've started to see a lot more on this and comparing this natural disaster to the natural disasters we've had in the last 2 months. But this is on par. I mean, the story I heard today was just, I mean, it's devastating. The story I read was that they didn't have much warning that the, in this one town, there were no like iPhone, like, you know, buzzes and tells you, hey man, there's a fire is a block away. They didn't have, for whatever reason, that didn't happen. There was no warning. So there were people getting up in the middle of the night, and within 10 minutes, their houses were engulfed in flames.
Well, that coupled with some of the drone footage that's come out with just entire neighborhoods wiped out. It looks like, you know, a giant tornado went over it or something. It's just amazing.
And 33 deaths we have now.
It's hard for me because, you know, we live in the Midwest, and every year there's wildfires. I mean, there's always this threat of wildfires in California, and we hear so much about it. But this is above and beyond. This is one that you know, you start to wonder about everything that's happened in terms of weather in the last month. This is on par with all that stuff.
It's very scary. I worked in Fresno, California as a reporter, and I went to the fires in Yosemite. We got trapped in. And a lot of people don't know that firemen, first of all, you got to give credit to these firemen who are fighting these fires.
Yeah.
They have to actually set fires to stop fires. That's part of what they do. They don't just drop retardant from the sky and those planes that you see. They have to set fire lines. And it's just nothing but burning out of control. And you don't know which way. If the wind blows, that fire goes that way. And it's almost like a strategy that they try and contain these fires, but you can if the weather changes. And then it just burns through entire neighborhoods are gone. And where do the people go? It's devastating.
Well, what's really scary about it, still hundreds missing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're
that's the thing. Well, when you look at those pictures, you can't imagine that they've searched all those lots. Just amazing.
Some more underreported stories. We also have in the underreported variety. Let's see here. You'd love the story. The Chicago Marathon, won by the first American, Galen Rupp.
I love this guy. I mean, he was from Oregon. He was, you know, an all-star athlete growing up, and then he goes to the Olympics. Who knew? And then he pulls out this huge win. But what I found incredibly fascinating, because he trained with Alberto Salazar, is that, you know, he'll run, you know, hundreds of hours during the week, but he does another, you know, 30 plus hours in the water. So he runs in, think of a bathtub, you know, or a small pool. It's his own private pool with a treadmill on it.
Yeah.
And he runs in the water because it breaks up lactic acid. It's not as much stress fracture or problems on the body. It was fascinating to me to read that whole story. And, of course, then I go to, well, why do we not have a gym in the middle of Chicago that I can invest in?
New craze.
And be the new workout thing, right? You know, spin took off and
Orange
we have all
Theory's
these gyms.
Out? Underwater running's in.
Exactly.
They mentioned on the coverage, too, that he sealed a room in his house to simulate being at altitude.
Right.
That's a good idea.
I just thought his whole story was so fascinating.
Oh, interesting about what goes into running a marathon for real. There's a lot that goes. We always hear the story of the amateurs who run and what it takes to train. But when you're trying to win it, what you have to go through.
Yeah, and then this sort of kid comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the typical person that we would think that would win a marathon.
Lauren, you also had Mold Gate, the Cubs Mold Gate. This was a story that was
fun of me during the break.
Yeah, this is really a 3-hour story. I mean, it came and went like that, but it really was about just a quick update on it. Steven Strasburg wasn't going to pitch Game 4 because he was sick, and the Nationals were sick because there was Dusty Baker said there was mold coming through the hotel that they were staying. They were going to switch hotels. Lauren, you believe him.
I totally believe him because I have major allergies when there's ragweed and different things. And I'm always looking at the pollen count. And I was trying to figure out during those days why I was having so much trouble. And it was the mold count. You know, I was in my car rolling down the window. I was so sick myself. And then I know what it's like when you have mold inside can make you really sick. So I believed it.
You don't believe it?
It just became a joke so fast. I think people are offended. It's like, we got all this stuff going on in Chicago. Now we're moldy too. It's like, come on, just pitch.
Just pitch.
Pitch even if you have mold in your system. Get over it.
We're going to show up at the ballpark. You can come too if you want.
Don't be the Derrick Rose of the Bulls.
Yeah, we live here. We're going to put nine guys on the field that breathe this constantly. You can get out there.
There's a new study out. There's a new study out that says this was a reputable study that said Chicago is one of the safest cities in the world. It is number 19 on the list, the second highest of American cities. I think San Francisco was 15th. But the idea that Chicago would make any list in terms of safety and crime is underreported.
Wasn't there weird criteria, though? Wasn't there, like, digital safety in here? And it wasn't just,
well, that's what they said.
Know,
they said the big
safety
thing that skewed them to the top was that they had great cybersecurity here in this town. So maybe that
does that makes me feel better about all the hacking when my credit card was stolen the other night.
All right, this one, I love this one. No more liquor license in River North. The area right here, just on Hubbard Street, just a block from our studio. If you've been down there recently at night, you will see that every single storefront in that area has turned into a hot, hip, new bar for Chicago. And Brandon Riley, the alderman in the 42nd Ward, has said enough. And this week, City Council said no more new liquor license to River North. What do you think of that?
I was really surprised when I saw that. I didn't even know it went on. And on the one hand, okay, I get it. Drive more business to maybe River West. On the other hand, really? you have the power to do that. But then I stopped myself and I thought, Chicago way. The aldermen get whatever they want here.
Well, it does get crazy down there, for one. And I can see some controls. Maybe somebody thinks that that's needed. But if you read into it, I think that there are allowances for hotels and
for restaurants.
Yes, yeah, so you have a certain percentage of your sales come from food, so that and people are.
But this
get
really has more to do with the bars that are strict bars in Chicago, and this is that popped up with the I can't remember the place that's the blonde
bottle blonde. Yeah.
And it also was another issue over a little further beyond the Ohio feeder ramp. This idea of the bars, straight up bars with no food or food being secondary, caused much more trouble to the area. And the area has gentrified, that there are a lot of condos, there are a lot of things going on there, and they just don't want that kind of this type. So that's what they're doing. They're changing the zoning code to eliminate bars that come in just for the party folk.
Well, that could be it. And I think maybe people are afraid of, you know, once Hubbard is really built out, which it basically is, where does the spillover go?
And we don't have the time, but there's a race component as well, because the bars, the bottle blonde, the list of who can come into the bar was eye-opening, the no baggy pants type stuff that we've been hearing about for decades now. And then also the other bar, there was discrimination that was placed. So race plays a part as well, but we'll get into that at some other point. 312-981-7200. Let's take our last break. We'll come back. We will do what stories took us down the rabbit hole and which stories will be remembered in 5, 10, 50, 500 years from now. Stay with us. All right, we're wrapping it up. 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news. Lauren Cohn and Jeff Cohen. Lauren Cohn and Jeff Cohen. Cohen and Cohn.
In
studio.
You're doing
this yourself. That's right. All right, so let's get to what story took us down the rabbit hole. We don't have a lot of time. And what stories will be remembered? Got an interesting one from The Atlantic. Will Donald Trump destroy the presidency? You read a long piece.
It's right. It's a new record for me. It's a clickbait headline for sure, but I think the point of the piece was, will he change the presidency? All the stuff we've talked about, sort of the coarse behavior, the over politicization of everything, kind of the scorched earth, will that become kind of the wave of the future for the next president and presidents after? I think the outcome for now is no, just because the writer just decided that there hasn't been enough political advantage for him as of yet. It's actually, he's had enough blowback.
Let's be frank. I mean, this is the second president in a row that has done this. I mean, President Obama, who tried to work with Congress, couldn't get it done, did the same type of policies that Trump is doing. He's hyper-loading him. Like, what Trump is doing is, but he's taking a playbook. And the thing I'm scared about is the fact is this just what we're going to do now? Every 4 years, going to undo that's, and change? I mean, is this
that's
what we're
why
do
I
now?
Called it a rabbit hole, because for me, it just made me think, you're right, is that what happens on day two? The prior person's executive orders are all thrown in the garbage. You know, every deal that we've made with a foreign country is in the garbage. Every treaty we've signed is in the garbage. Do other countries figure when they're, you know, make an agreement with the U.S., it's for 4 years.
And it scares me only because I have to ask. I try to be objective. Every single thing that President Obama put into place for this country, not every one of them is worth repealing or rescinding. It can't be. I'm not dumb to think that that's the case. I mean, this is politics at play. This is not, I mean, everything isn't, I mean, because they'll sell, the sell is, oh, that's terrible for this country. Is it? I mean, are every single thing that we did, I mean, 4 years, is it? Was it that, I mean, are really running on the idea of complete and utter incompetence? I don't think so, but that's where I'm at.
Well, my response is I hope not, because it's exhausting.
Yeah,
I'm completely exhausted. And the other thing is if there is a silver lining and all the craziness is that maybe with the whole turn of the tide against politicians to elect the non-politician, because we're sick of the politicians, and seeing this is going to get more people involved, more people or different types of people to run or be engaged, and it'll elevate us to a different level.
I had, as my rabbit hole, and it's very interesting, it's similar to what happened here in River North, but Alderman Proco Joe Moreno and the fight with the guy who owns the Doubledore building. And it's very strange because zoning happened this week that essentially changed the zoning of the Doubledore property that actually devalues it. And there was the video that came out a couple months ago that showed them fighting on the street, the alderman and the property owner, and questions about whether or not the alderman superseded his power or used his authority in an abusive authority by saying, I'm going to make sure this doesn't work. And now it's actually gotten through city council. Essentially, this guy wants to turn Doubledore, the old Doubledore, into the next Banana Republic or whoever will take. But the alderman is protecting that, saying, no, I don't want you to ruin the neighborhood the way it is. And although if you've been to Wicker Park, that argument's long gone. I mean, so I just was interested in this argument between a guy who believes that he's got his community's best interest in mind and a property owner. I just think that's interesting about
when he came off like a bully.
Yeah.
The argument in the video. I mean, don't forget that there's cell phones everywhere if you're going to be out
there.
He
knew it was being taped.
Yeah.
You could tell. They all did.
But
it's
the arrogance of the politicians and, you know.
He believes strongly in his argument. I mean, there's something to be said about it. I mean, the way that went down with the Doubledore was a little bit head scratcher. I mean, ruined a club that means a ton for that neighborhood because the building owner wants to make out, which is, I mean, that's his right, I guess, right?
A certain He's a businessman.
It just shines a spotlight on our system. That's what we have here, the alderman. Yes, when it comes to development, they're the boss.
Yeah. Oh, really? There you go. You just summed it up in one sentence. All right, we're done. All right, which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 500 years from this week? Lauren.
Go Cubs, go.
Yeah, you think this is the start?
I think it's the Cubs.
Okay. I hope so. Pete hopes so. Everybody hopes so. I like that. Jeff, what do you got?
It could be the Cubs. For once, I have a 500-year one. Last time I was on, I said Trubisky, which I think is already wrong.
Right.
But I think this one, there's a super volcano under Yellowstone Park that if it blows could be a planet killer, they say. So that was the scroll for me, and I got to that one. I was going to say that was underreported, but I'll say that's my 500 year.
500 years would be like, remember when we all died from that volcano?
Right, when we're looking for leftover berries, we can talk about that.
And I say that the story that will be remembered is soda tax. I think this is a huge loss.
One.
I think that the fight against obesity and the epidemic took a huge loss because no other city's going to take this on anymore because it will be political suicide. So this will be remembered when we're all 600 pounds and it's an idiocracy and we're trying to use Gatorade to make our plants work. Lauren Cohen and Jeff Cohen in studio. Lauren, journalist. Jeff, investigator, reporter, Chicago Tribune. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank
Great
you, sir.
Thank you for having us.